We're back to the Neil Haley Show here on the Caregiver Dave Celebrity Segment. I'm excited to welcome program Caregiver Dave Nassani. Dave, how are you, man? What's up?
I'm doing better. I had a little bout with Omicron, but I think I'm winning.
I hope you're winning. You stay safe, definitely. And it's just a process. Everyone's getting it. Trust me, the whole world will at one point raise they had COVID, and it is what it is. And hopefully at one point in time, everyone will get it so many times that it won't be as dangerous as it is, because people stay safe, wear your mask, social distance as much as you can. And I don't mind social distancing. I like this whole thing where I go from one call to the next, don't have to drive places. And my
that's because you're antisocial, you know,
I'm antisocial at this. Well, I just want to have my own studio and that's it. All right, so I'm excited to welcome the program, Bailey Littrell, Bailey is the son of Brian of the Backstreet Boys. Bailey, thanks for stopping by. How are you, man?
Of course, I'm great. How are you?
Doing fantastic. And so the whole process of being a musician, how does that make you feel every day performing in front of people?
You know what? Now it's just become such a routine that it doesn't seem like out of the ordinary. I will say, though, after COVID, stepping back, actually not being out there in front of a bunch of people, not having to socialize, you're like, wow, this is different. You know, it's kind of a little bit of a shock. I have actually, you know, enjoyed a little bit of the solitude, but I'm pretty ready to go back to normal at this point.
And it's interesting. And then we're going to find out how he got his form of music, because it's not definitely like his father's. But Dave, I'm going to go right to the first question. Because your dad was so famous, did you always want to be a musician, or you're going another direction right at the beginning? Or is this something that said, I want to be part of that rush of the crowd? So I'm sure you got the opportunity to go to those and see him perform in front of thousands and thousands of people. It's a rush beyond belief. I was a former professional wrestler. I did most of the rush of 500 to 1,000 people. I did one WWE show where there were 17,000. I was looking out and I said, oh my God. But it's a rush that's not like nothing else, isn't it?
Oh, I mean, yeah, exactly. It's that is basically the driving force behind it all. I mean, you know, every kid has their dreams of being a professional athlete. Obviously, the Littrell boys were not big enough to do that. So we do music. But I think growing up, you know, and seeing Dad play those types of shows, I mean, they let me introduce him at 5 years old when we were playing those huge crowds. So it was like, that was my first taste of it. And I thought, oh, this is totally something I want to do one day. I remember right before one of their shows, I went in their dressing room, put on like whatever outfit Dad was getting ready to wear. And I was like standing in front of their mirror. I'm like, Dad, can I be the sixth Backstreet Boy? And he's like, no, but he's like, one day you're going to get your shot if you want to do this. And I'm like, well, when is that? He's like, well, you're like six now. So I'm not sure. It's going to be a while.
Funny. So you're into country now, right?
I am. Yes. Four years.
So your dad, I can't even remember what genre Backstreet Boys was, but as I recall, I don't think it was country, right?
It was a boy band.
No, a boy band.
And so when I say I'm a fan, Bailey, I was exposed to the music. Not saying I'm going to concerts, even though I should have, because it would have been a good place to meet interesting people. But, you know,
I remember seeing him on MTV and stuff, and it wasn't your traditional classic country. What kind of country? There's so many different kinds of country, Bailey. What kind of country are you doing?
You know, basically, the first record I came out with, 770 Country, was very country pop. A lot of those songs, I hadn't really been writing that much at the time. A lot of them came from a lot of my good friends over at Tree Vibes, which is Florida Georgia Line's publishing company. Great guys over there. That's how I met some of my closest friends I have now. But this second album that I'm working on, this is more really singer-songwriter country. And so far, it's been 100% written by myself. So it definitely has a completely different feel to it. Every song really tells a story. And we've done full live band so far. So it definitely has a different feel. It's not as much of a country pop feel, but you've got a couple songs in there that are definitely going to hit home in that genre though.
Are you from Nashville?
I'm from Atlanta, Georgia, actually.
Okay. So you're doing all of this from Atlanta.
So yes. So Atlanta and that.
Yeah. But what's even happened in country music since the first time, Dave, you and I were interviewing the newer country stars? There has been this tremendous transformation of what a country music star is, even 3 years difference, 4 years. I've interviewed country stars for the last 8 years. And Dave and I from, you know, just anyone and anybody. But the big thing I saw on Explained, which I saw on Netflix, is specifically enough when we have seen an urban pop movement in country, it's changed the genre completely. You know, it all started and do you think that's what kind of really attracted you to country music? Is that kind of change? And
I think, yes, I think it definitely opened me up to thinking it was possible. You know, I grew up listening to country music my whole life, just being from Georgia, spending time with my grandparents. And that's kind of what started it. But when it definitely became more mainstream and out there, kind of like, you know, give it a try. I thought, I mean, why not? This would be amazing to just try to venture into. Now, country, as mainstream, as big as it is, it's still very small. So there's a tight group of people you have to get in with that have to really accept you. And then that's kind of your window. It's like trying to make it to the big leagues. You're like, man, you know, I've been playing bars for 4 years, like, you know, when's that next big step? So it's definitely a different world. Like, you know, I got to open up for the Backstreet Boys when I first started. We were playing a 43 show tour, you know, playing 17,000 people a night. And that was like my first big tour. And then you come off of that and you do country tours and you're playing, you know, bars, or you're doing smaller venues, and you're like, you know, it was kind of like a mind screw. You're like, oh, wait. Okay, now I'm in my own genre and I actually have to start from the bottom up. Like I have to do all this work. So that was a shock for a 16-year-old, like, uh-oh, like what am I doing? You know? And then you have to build up that courage to you know, to get where you want to be. I mean, like I think after that I gained a whole lot of confidence. It taught me so much, and it's been seriously just so much fun to be able to build my career and personally be able to sell out shows and watch those shows and venues grow, you know? And I mean, one day if I ever can make it close to arenas, I mean, that's just going to be the best accomplishment, you know, just after seeing my dad. I mean, I can't tell you there is no golden standard. I mean, what he's been able to achieve, it's very, very, very hard to chase. So all I'm going to say is, you know, I can hope I just see a glimpse of that.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure your father is very proud of your accomplishments and is very supportive. Does he give you advice, and do you listen to him?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. And yes.
Yes. Both. Yes. He, the best advice he's pretty much ever given me is just, you know, well, two things is owning the stage. I mean, that's the one big thing is comfortability on stage. If you do not have it, then I mean, you don't really have anywhere to go from there. It's just, you have to bring the crowd basically up on stage with you, make them feel like you're singing to every single one of them and interacting. Because if you don't have that, if you don't catch the crowd, then, you know, then they're out of it. You're out of it. It's just kind of, it doesn't feel like you're being able to relate to anyone. Second, it's just, I mean, this sounds basic, but it's just being yourself, doing what you want to do, having the heart to do it. That's all that matters. If you don't have the heart to do it, then do something else. And you have to have that investment, you know?
You know, and you talk about the humble of playing in front of 100 people after you played in front of 17,000. That's yes. Going to be crazy. I mean, I've done the same thing where one night I'll wrestle in front, when I was a pro wrestler, you know, eons ago, it was 30, 40 people. One night, next night's 2,000. You still got to bring it every night. And what do you say for people that say, I don't want to play in front of small crowds? I don't want to play in front. I only want big crowds, or I'm not going. What would you say to them, especially with what you've done?
Well, I'm going to have to say this is not a reality. Like, it is not a reality whatsoever. I mean, you have to go, you know, and build your way. I mean, there's some artists, and it's a, you know, very sliver, you know, of country music or pop or whatever genre that sometimes, you know, right out the gate, get that big tour where they get to open for a big act or whatever. And then they get kind of spit out into the real world of, okay, now you have to go actually sell shows. You're not an opener. You have to build your audience. You have to build your fan base. That is very tough. It's a mind screw. And it's like, you know, I just got this huge taste of what this is, and now I have to go do it myself. Like, if you can't mentally do that, then do something else. Like, it's just the matter of you got to be strong. You got to be strong-willed, strong-minded, but you have to stay humble. And if there's not, you know, if there's not a grateful bone in your body for the people that showed up for you, if that's 5, if that's 100, if that's 200, 400, I don't, arenas, then you got to do something else. You know, I think I've learned, especially from my parents, it's just, you know, be grateful for everything you have. You know, when I would be frustrated, you know, like, man, I can't sell at a place bigger than this yet. And then finally, you know, you'd get there, but it was like, you know, look at the people in the crowd. Look at these people that have flown in from New York, from South America, from Canada. I mean, these people are from right down the road, or they, you know, they've come from all over the country just to pack this tiny little bar to watch you play. You know, like, if you can't see that and be grateful, then, you know, that's tough. You got to rethink what you're doing.
You definitely have to. That's a great point. Rethink what you're doing. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah. So your dad is as hot as ever. Backstreet Boys, they're booking tickets on concerts and filling up auditoriums, stadiums. I don't know. And they still look young. You know, it's not like the Beach Boys, you know, a bunch of old 70-year-old rockers, you know, are still doing the things, which these guys will probably keep doing it when they're 70. You know, yeah. that makes you feel really old when all of your peers are old men. And then yes, you look in the mirror and you say, oh my God, I'm an old man too.
I'm telling you, they've all had their moments where they're like, oh my God, we're getting old. And I'm like, and you guys are the
one. Yeah, you're the one probably that says they're getting old, right?
You rip. Yeah, I'm like, oh, you know what, guys? You look good. That's all that matters. Yeah. Listen, I mean, I can't guarantee that, you know, one of you aren't going to tear your ACL if you're, you know, you hit that one mark on stage or whatever. But listen, I mean, for instance, my dad just had knee surgery. We've been playing basketball, and we play basketball once a week. Dad just had knee surgery. He's fully recovered. I said, all right, old man, you got to get out there and hit your marks. I mean, it's time. So, and they're still dancing. I mean, like, better than I'll ever be able to dance. That's one thing. I don't understand how they do it. The energy they still have. I mean, they get back into shape with the snap of the finger, and they're rolling. I don't get it.
And the energy level of what they have to perform in a concert.
Yes.
You don't have to do all that dancing, right?
So no, I just get to clutch my guitar, and yeah, I get to sit there and play. Like, that's the beauty of it. I've got 2 shows coming up. You know, this record coming out. I've got a single February 22nd, right? That single is the song I wrote. Basically 90% of it's acoustic guitar. I just get to sit up there and basically play this guitar and have a band, and I'm like, man, I don't have to break a sweat. This is pretty good. That's enough. This is a good thing to be thankful about. I don't have to work out for 2 hours. I get to just sit there and play.
So other than your dad and the Backstreet Boys, who inspired you, and who was like your mentor, and who are you trying to emulate? I know you're trying to be yourself, but right, that all had to come from somewhere, didn't it?
I think it's come from a cluster of artists. I gotta say, John Mayer was like the first person that really, like, you know, inspired me. John Mayer's music, I think, is something completely just out of the ordinary that doesn't come along. He's a generational artist, and his music is so creative and different. That's what I love about it. And the man's able to do any genre he wants and be successful at it. So I definitely look up to him as a writer and as an artist. I love a guy named Michael Martin Murphy that used to do country music years ago, back in the 70s and the 80s. Obviously Willie Nelson, you know, Merle Haggard. I look up to a lot of old country greats, and John Mayer is the more modern influence that I think ties into all that. But those are just a few. I mean, I grew up listening to Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin. Obviously, they don't really resonate
with the music I make.
But, you know,
I like your history. Who got you into that? There you go.
Well, my mom, first off, loved Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, right? Those were kind of our two. I called that our California playlist. So I grew up kind of back and forth. We had a place in LA. And so we would, you know, if we were ever cleaning the house or spending the day outside, we had our, you know, Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett playing. And I'd be back home in Georgia. My grandparents would be, you know, take me on a road trip somewhere. And we had, you know, Patsy Cline, you know, Willie Nelson, Merle Haggard, Johnny Cash, Tammy Wynette. So I got, you know, both sides of it. You know, I got history and country, and then I got to hear all the old, you know, vocal pop greats. I mean, I love me some Frank Sinatra.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad that you have come to appreciate the classic country, because a lot of today's country people don't, you know.
It's very true. That's the thing. I mean, yes, it has evolved, and I mean, everything's going to evolve and change, unfortunately. I mean, if we like it or not, but you know, the big difference is, I mean, there's a lot of great changes that have been made to country, but also at the same time, I feel like we lose our roots. And that's what hurts. You know, it's just like, I'm trying to find that balance of keeping it classic, but yet giving it a new age sound. And that's tough, but I'm trying to preserve the old and keep the new, but it's like,
good for you.
A group called Midland, if you've heard of them, they're a trio in country right now. They've been super successful. I love those guys. They're super down to earth, super sweet. I went to go see them at the Roxy 2 months ago down here in Atlanta, and they are classic as country can get. I mean, 70s, 80s inspired, and one of their hugest inspirations, also one of mine, is the Eagles. So they tie in a lot of the Eagles to what they do. So it has this fantastic sound to it. And they're one of a kind, and they're really successful right now. And everyone's like, oh, this new stuff's so cool. I'm like, new? Like, go listen to 70s, 80s country and then come back to me and tell me if Midland's new. Like, I'm telling you, their music is so classic, and I love it.
So where do you think your music goes, and where do you want your music to go? What kind of, where do you want to be? The type of style music compared to what artists do you think you're kind of like right now?
A lot of people that have listened to this record so far, which is kind of funny, have compared it to John Mayer's Continuum album. It's very, like, you know, big band. I've got two songs in there that kind of lean like R&B. It's just a very cool vibe. We've got some songs that kind of sound a little bit funky. I mean, we've got, you know, heavy guitars in there, big live band. It's a super cool vibe. It still leans, you know, more people have said it's kind of folk more than anything. And I do like that. It's very singer-songwriter, very folk. It's not, I mean, I'm still going for country, but it is very out of the box. But I'm still trying to hit it home there. There's going to be some songs, because I'm not finished with this record yet. But there's still going to be some songs on there that are, you know, yet to be done, that are going to be more country. And that's what I'm excited for. You're going to hear some steel and acoustic guitars, and I'm ready for that. But I've got this single coming out February 22nd. Gone's the first one off the record, and it's available for pre-order today. And then we're still working on finishing up this upcoming album. So I'm pretty excited.
So tell me about the single. That's coming out.
So Gone, I wrote almost 2 years ago now, which is crazy. Absolutely love that song. Definitely a storyteller song. So the response I've gotten from it is, it's been very great within the family. I let the family hear everything and tell me what they think. It's super, super dear to my heart, and I hope people will enjoy it. It's very singer-songwriter. But it's a, I mean, it really just tells the story of classic heartbreak, learning lessons. And I think people are going to enjoy it. We get to showcase this sucker actually live as a single for the first time, March 22nd. in Nashville. We're going to do like a showcase at Jason Aldean's bar, I think, downtown on Broadway. And then March 19th in Woodstock, actually like 20 minutes away from my hometown, we're going to do a show at a place called Mad Life. So that's those two places, 2 days apart, are going to be, you know, that showcasing of the song. A lot of new stuff from the record is going to get played, which is great. And it's basically, you know, how we've kind of planned it is it's like a listening party live, you know, for the fans so that everybody can hear it and get that first taste of it. So I'm excited.
It seems like really exciting times for sure. Like hearing what's happening. Where are you performing? Places you're going to perform. So people that, again, were nationally syndicated all over the world and all the different places, where are you going to be playing?
So yes, the Mad Life is the first one. That's the 19th of March. So that's going to be our first show. That's in Woodstock, Georgia.
Woodstock.
And then, yeah, that second one, the 22nd show, you know, we're really trying to get a date down. So I think it's going to be the 22nd. That's the Jason Aldean's downtown Broadway in Nashville. So that's going to be a blast. I'm going to try to get some other artists with me for that one, just to some local, you know, Georgia guys to come in, rep our state in Nashville. So I think we're going to do that. It's going to be a blast, but I'm trying to think other upcoming shows. You know, we're going to have some this summer and we're just going to, you know, take it slow, but figure out, you know, the best markets and places to go. So probably a lot more in Georgia and probably some more in Nashville.
All right. So last thing is Dave has a caregiving question. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, my wife needed a caregiver one day after 25 years of marriage, and she suffered a stroke, lost her speech, became paralyzed. And I was only 42 at the time, pretty young to have anything like that happening. And I'm sure caregiving has rarely entered into your mind because you're so young, but you know, everybody's got grandparents. Have you had any situations where, you know somebody who is taking care of another one, a caregiver?
Oh, of course. Just recently, actually, my grandma's been going through some health struggles, and it's been really hard. We've been kind of taking care of her around the clock. You know, she had a heart attack. She actually had two heart attacks.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh.
And things kind of went, you know, downhill from there. She was in congestive heart failure.
Oh.
So, you know, at one point we had her wearing that vest that, like, you know, will shock you if your heart stops. You know, yeah. She's got a PICC line. She's got to wear that little bag around her shoulder like every day, and we have to change her Melrino. And it's been quite a lot. I think I've learned so much just from that. And I can't imagine, you know, what you just said, what you went through, because it's completely a life-changing thing. Taking care of somebody and having to put yourself aside and give basically that person everything you've got. I mean, my mom's been taking care of her and my mom's two sisters. I mean, basically around the clock. And my mom's tired. It's been a whole lot. But when you love that person, I mean, it comes a lot easier.
Yeah, well, that's my mission. I help caregivers to stay alive because 30% of them die before their loved ones do from the stress. So I came up with caregiverdave.com. It's a support group that will help them to put their oxygen mask on first, put their needs first, because if they go down, you know, you're both going down, just like the analogy on the airplane. So make sure you turn your mother on to and her sisters on to caregiverdave.com, because we want them all around here for a long time.
Exactly.
Well, thank
Bailey,
you so
much. Where can we find your website for best place to find info on your work? Where can you go there?
Okay, so Instagram's still number one best spot. So that's Bailey Bailey Literal _ music.
Okay.
The website is baileyliteral.com.
Okay.
You can find, I've got to update some stuff on there, but mostly you can find some stuff. But Instagram, I would say, is the hot spot to go to find any new info on songs and stuff right now.
All right, well, fantastic. Best of luck, continued success. I know you're going to have a great career and appreciate you telling stories and, you know, continue to rock it. So I appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you. You guys are great.
All right. Take care. All right. That was the Caregiver Dave celebrity segment, guys. Take care.